The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this August 27th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this perfect, perfect day in the Auburn Opelika area. Sun is shining. Man, it was cold outside this morning. I was able to step outside for a few minutes, and man, it was incredible. Even today, it's not, you don't sweat when you walk outside. You don't want to like run inside as fast as you can. I mean, heck, Christian's got not a sweatshirt, but a thin hoodie on today. I mean, that's what tells you something ain't quite right around here, but we're going to enjoy it while we can. And so, again, hope you're all doing well. Happy Wednesday. I guess I know the answer on how you're doing today, Christian, given the weather and the vibes you got going
on. Doing pretty well. Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. This is a fantastic day. Yeah, you mentioned it. Not quite the hoodie, but not quite a sweatshirt, but yeah, the thin little hoodie, and the fact that I can actually wear one now is absolutely incredible. You really hope that this isn't that false fall that comes for about a week and a half, and all of a sudden it's late September or early October, and you're like, why is it 94 degrees again?
Oh, it's
going to
happen
today.
Just be ready for it.
No, we're not having it. It's going to be slowly starting to cool its way down. It's going to be absolutely beautiful every single day. And man, it is a beautiful day because it's now high school football eve. The mental calendar still thrown off with just about everybody in the Auburn Opelika area.
Exhausted.
With a bunch of these games being moved up to Thursday night due to Auburn University playing on Friday night. And so having to bump everything up an entire day has been a little bit difficult, but I'm excited to be able to call another game. I know you're excited to get back in the booth as well. We're just ready for it to hurry up and get to Thursday, so that way all of the prep is done and everything on that side of things.
Yeah, I think weather-wise, here in Auburn is supposed to be nice for you guys tomorrow. I know Opelika's on the road. Auburn High, we are on the road. We're going to Vestavia. As of now, the weather looks pretty solid. I'll admit, though, this is the first time, literally as we speak, pulling up on our unnamed weather app, the weather for Friday in Waco. I haven't even thought about looking at the weather for that in terms of talking about this game and what the offenses and the defenses and things are going to do. Partly cloudy with afternoon showers or thunderstorms. Chance of rain 50% in Waco, Texas on Friday. So keep that in mind when making game picks and talking about offenses and things between Auburn and Baylor, which we will get to on today's show, talking more about the Bears and the Tigers and continuing to put ourselves in the Baylor camp for a little bit about how they are going about this game and why they feel that they can beat Auburn in the season opener on Friday night. We have Jordan Hill with us today as well from Dogs 247. As Georgia gets ready to open up the season, they got a doozy in week one. So we get to talk about that exciting matchup. Not really, but we do enjoy talking with Jordan and getting full fall camp recap updates. I think some shooting star or something happened in Athens because they got a chance to talk to Kirby Smart yesterday.
Wow.
So we actually get to hear about what Kirby thinks, which is cool. So we'll talk to Jordan coming up at 2:30, and then hour number two is going to be a whole lot of fun. No Double D, no Daryl Dapperts today, but we are going to have a good time in hour number two making season picks and projections.
Was there not a shooting star for you in Atlanta? Because you got to talk to Kirby, but he just wasn't very...
I talked to Kirby. He just wasn't having it. I talked to Kirby. He didn't want to talk to me is what happened there. I had forgotten about that. Yeah. And I think I just buried that in my memory.
It was because it was back-to-back in like three of the first six questions.
Because Dan got a question, yeah.
And then myself asked about Jordan Hare, and then you asked about other things, and he just...
What did I ask about? It was a legitimate question.
It was something on the... a position on the offensive side and the defensive side of the football that you would like to see improved from last year. And he said, you know what? I don't like that question because if I say one position, that means I'm leaving another one out. So I'm not going to answer that next.
Well, guess what, Kirby? I could have asked you about – never mind.
You could have asked him about Jordan Hare and he gave –
his favorite car or something. Yeah.
But, no, it's going to be a fantastic show here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Again, hour number two is our picks. We meant to do it in week or before week zero, but we'll take a little bit of a pass. We have our conference championship game predictions, our winners, how many teams will get in from each conference, and then we're talking about the 12-team playoff format. We're talking about our 12 teams, and we're going to break those down and give you our official and correct national champion. And that's what we have in hour number two. But a lot of news, a lot of really good information coming out of hour number one. And Jacob, you mentioned it, kind of putting ourselves over in Waco, Texas, in Baylor Bear land, because Sports Illustrated released an article from the Baylor perspective and said, what are three keys that Baylor needs to have in order to get a win over Auburn? And so that's where we get to start hour number two. And those three, apologies.
Hour number one.
Did I say hour number three?
You said hour number two.
Oh. Hour number one. Hour number two is coming up. But we do have three things that
go.
Baylor needs to
it's
do.
It's a lot of numbers going on over there.
Yes. And that's before. No.
Before.
Like that. Three things that Baylor needs to do to defeat the Auburn Tigers. Number one, it says stop the explosive plays. Last year, we all know Baylor's defense was abysmal, at least statistically, and a lot of that came from the explosive side and the explosive plays. I said their secondary wasn't the strongest, but they did go out into the portal, as you mentioned yesterday, Jacob, talking about the defense. Went and got out some really solid players that were starters in the P4 level. Yeah. On the defensive side of the football, it was more so P4 starters. On the offensive side, it was more the G5 stars with the receivers and a couple linemen as well. So the biggest one that they have for Baylor is to stop the explosive plays for the Auburn Tigers.
And I totally understand where Baylor's coming from, right? Because while we may not have seen that a ton from the Auburn offense a year ago, it's the big play potential that Auburn brings into this game, yes, but really all season long, right? I mean, we've talked about this from the Auburn side of it of, man, hit a 60-yard bomb downfield once every now and then. Throw a slant over the middle, catch it 5 yards deep, but turn it into 40 or 50 yards. Like, Auburn has the potential to do that. You just feel like when you go back to a year ago, Auburn just didn't have a whole lot of those because of miscommunication, and yes, there were drop passes and quarterbacks running for their lives and things like that. So if you're Baylor, when you look on film, maybe you're not super worried about it, but when you look at the athletes on this Auburn team, it absolutely should scare the crap out of you because of Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Malcolm Simmons, plus the running backs, plus Jackson Arnold and everybody in between. Yeah, you have to stop the big plays because those are crowd killers on the road. That's what it, when a road team goes in and starts hitting big play after big play and moving the chains and going on touchdown drives, the crowd has nothing to do with it anymore. And you're not playing a road game. It feels like you're playing a neutral site. So, yeah, absolutely. Baylor is going to do everything they can, as they should, to stop Auburn's wideouts from making big plays.
And even if you go back and look at last year's Auburn team, their ability to get the chunk play, whether that was with Cam Coleman or with Keandre Lambert-Smith or through the run game, Auburn still wasn't bad. And that, I mean, their offensive ratings were top 30 in the country. Just the turnover rates were in the 110s but the ability to get the big play for Auburn wasn't necessarily the issue last year. You're now hoping for the Auburn standpoint that you can correct after those big plays, and like Hugh Freeze said, you can finish drives and kicks, whether that be field goals or extra points. The second one is to put pressure on Jackson Arnold. They've said that this is a pretty simple key, and Dave Aranda talked a lot about this a couple of nights ago with the Baylor beat writers, saying that they're going to do everything they can to stack the box, try and force Auburn to throw the football and blitz to not allow Jackson Arnold to sit and be comfortable. And halfway laughed when reading that, because it was, oh no, you're daring Hugh Freeze to throw the football? Oh no.
Yeah.
But at the same time, why would you do anything else? A quarterback that's still unproven, still a little bit unpolished right now in the college football levels. Yes, you have all of the receivers and you have that very high projected ceiling for Jackson Arnold, but your first game with a new team on the road in a funky environment, much less the weather that you talked about, try and do everything you can to take away the run and make the quarterback do everything himself.
But I'll kind of push back here and say Auburn doesn't need to take that and overcorrect by any means.
No.
Auburn needs to run the football on Friday. Stop me if you've heard that one before, that Auburn needs to run the ball. Hugh, run the ball, right?
Paul.
And if you do that, then they have to stack the box. I don't care what they come out in. Hand it off to Damari Alston on 1st and 10 on your first offensive possession. I don't care.
And then maybe again on 2nd and 7.
Do it again and again and again. Make them stop you. Make them stop the run. Because if they do, you're going to have one-on-one at every single position player on the outside. And I promise you that Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton, Perry Thompson when he's in, Malcolm Simmons, all these guys, Sam Turner, Horatio Fields, even your tight ends too, you start talking about them, they are better than whoever's going to be matched up against them. You will win your one-on-ones outside with your receivers and tight ends, but you have to start by running the football. So Baylor, they very well might. They very well might stack the box and say, throw the ball, Jackson, see what you got. Cool. Auburn has this unique, crazy idea called the RPO that you can run. And you have the, what's the O? What's the word? What is that? Option. You have the option to do what you want to do. And Auburn has to be able to execute that at a high level. And if you do, Baylor can't stop you.
And you get to the point, too. We talked about it last year where instead of the RPO, man, make it an RRO. It's a run-run option. There's not even an O. It's an RR.
1st and 10, run the ball.
Your offensive game plan right now is an RR. It's a run or a run. Depending on who keeps it and depending on where it goes, those are the only two things
sure
that you're looking at. Sticking with the running the football, again, we're talking about an article from Sports Illustrated on the Baylor side of things, on articles that their beat writers have written saying, what does Baylor need to do to beat Auburn? So far, it's saying stop the explosive plays, put pressure on Jackson Arnold, and it says run it down their throats with Bryson Washington. That's their 100-yard back, and says, again, I understand this from the standpoint of football, of you want to work with Sawyer Robertson, obviously, one of statistically the best quarterbacks in college football, one of the best returning quarterbacks in college football, but the idea is to hand it off to your running back and allow him to have a lot of success. That way the play action pass is available, those deep shots are available with Sawyer Robertson and the speedy wide receivers. This is one that I don't know if I feel like is completely possible.
Please, 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 please. If Baylor is listening to this, I hope Dave Aranda has ESPN 106.7, ESPN.
He's got that Radio Alabama
and the Radio Alabama app, baby. He's got it on his phone, and they're playing in the facility right now in his office.
We're giving him bulletin board material.
Please line up man to man and try to run on this Auburn team. Please try to, quote, run it down their throats. I know Baylor didn't say that. It's the beat writers that did. I'm begging you. They'll be able to run it a little bit, sure. But if your game plan is to say, we're just going to win in the trenches, we're just going to beat that Auburn defensive line, their linebackers, they can't do anything. We're better than them. Please do that. I'm begging you, because Auburn will absolutely destroy this team if that's what Baylor decides to do. If you look at this Baylor offense like we have in depth, and really did yesterday too, who's the best player on their offense?
The quarterback.
It's Sawyer Robertson.
Yes.
He's the best player. So why would you take it out of his hands? Why would you say, And I guess the pressure or whatever, but it's game one, and he's returning from last year. Like, this isn't a freshman. This isn't a true freshman. This isn't a Jackson Arnold situation with a guy transferring in for his first year with the offense. Like, Sawyer Robertson's the best player they have on that side of the football. Why would you take it out of his hands? They have to run the ball just as any team does, but for the game plan to be, yeah, we're going to line up and win with our Jimmies and Joes, Big 12 versus SEC, buddy, you're going to lose. You're going to lose that battle every single time. So I guess for Auburn's sake, do it. Go for it, Baylor. Have fun with that.
This article, you feel like the first two are very understandable. Again, stop the explosive plays. Sure, yeah, that's something that you very much agree in. Put pressure on Jackson Arnold. Yeah, why wouldn't you try to? Why wouldn't you try and stack the box and not allow Auburn to do what they want to do, which is control the line of scrimmage and get 6 yards per play where it makes Jackson Arnold's life that much easier? Feel like with this one, they just needed that third bullet point. They needed that third big highlight to be able to say. Because it says, if Baylor can come out and find success on the ground with Washington, it makes the offense's life a lot easier, obviously. It'll take pressure off of Robertson's shoulders and will also open up the play-action game and make Auburn's safeties start creeping in. Hypothetically, yes. The secondary then would get too close. Josh Cameron can blow right past them. Robertson is capable of putting the team on his back and throwing for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. The end of the article goes, but if they get Washington rolling early, good luck stopping this offense. Please.
I don't know where this newfound confidence has come in from Baylor, but I respect it, I guess. I don't know. They don't have the dudes to hang in this game. And that's why I've said so often, and will continue to say even on Friday afternoon when we're sitting here hours before kickoff, this is not about Baylor. This game has nothing to do with Baylor. I don't care. If Auburn goes and plays their game and shows their talent and plays man-to-man football, Auburn will destroy this team. But when's the last time Auburn did that?
Exactly.
That's the problem here.
I would say other than the quarterback spot, which just not because of the names, but because of what you've seen, especially going from last year to this year with Robertson still being on this Baylor side, you feel like that gives the one advantage to Baylor, but I'll take Auburn's DBs over their receivers, which basically counteracts that step of Robertson.
Yeah, exactly. And we had somebody send us a text. It's a picture of, I believe it's the blue chip ratio that we've talked about, right, of 4- and 5-star players on rosters across college football, where Auburn is a top 10 team in terms of talent on this roster at 64% blue chip ratio.
Yeah,
players.
Baylor's like 14, aren't they?
Baylor's not even on the list of the 20 teams that this guy sent us. And he says that Auburn is the only team in the top 10 of talent that's not actually ranked in the AP poll, says ain't no way Baylor is beating Auburn, that Auburn has to win this game. He also says that Dave Aranda dances to the new show theme song and music that we have. So
There we go.
Yeah, Dave. He claims that Dave Aranda's a fan of the updated imaging we have.
It does have a little bit of like a deep root country in there. So
yeah,
sure. But no, I completely agree. Again, with that blue chip ratio, I've done our research. I'm pretty sure, yeah, Auburn was in there in the top 10 at like, what, you said 64, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure Baylor was 14. We've talked about how it is 4-1 when you look at the sidelines of 4- and 5-star players from Auburn and for Baylor.
And Auburn doesn't have a number next to their name to start the season. So
it's basically, it's a lot like last year when we were halfway through the season and looking at the statistics of the teams that have done this, 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 and this are 37-6, and Auburn had like 5 of those losses.
Yeah. That sounds about right. So there you go. There's the Baylor perspective on what they feel, and the people who cover that team feel that the Bears have to do to win this game. We'll start talking Auburn and what the Tigers have to do to win this game. Give you some of our keys as well. Don't want to give away too much because we got to have something to talk about on Friday, but we dive into that conversation right after this here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 as we really start to get into the keys for Auburn against Baylor on Friday as we continue to inch closer and closer and closer to kickoff between the Tigers and the Bears. And this is really in response to kind of what we're seeing on the Baylor side of what they feel they need to do to win this game on Friday, what gives them the biggest advantage over the Tigers and things like that. And so, not to go super deep, right, because again, we do want to really have a big preview on Friday afternoon as well, but a couple of keys for you, Christian, for Auburn, just generically to go in and play well, have a chance, and not just get blown out in this game against Baylor. What are some things that Auburn, in your opinion, needs to do to make this a competitive ballgame?
Yeah, well, it was my number one overall before you even read the unnamed weather app, and it was controlling the line of scrimmage, both on the offensive and the defensive side of the football. The Auburn offensive line, you feel like, could be a question in this game just because you feel like you've heard some stuff out of fall camp about them still trying to gel, still trying to figure everything out, but you still feel like you should be able to run between the tackles and have some pretty good success doing so. There's been plenty of people that talked about, man, if you're looking at it and Auburn's getting 6-7 yards every single carry, and then when they're on the defensive side, man, they're getting in the backfield. Baylor's losing 2 yards. Sawyer Robertson's getting sacked. They were like, well, you could honestly probably turn this off and go find something better to do in the second half, just simply because the line of scrimmage is going to mean so much. Auburn's obviously used to playing much bigger offensive linemen and much more talented offensive linemen when it comes to the SEC schedule, just saying it like it is. So my number one key to the game for Auburn on Friday is to control the line of scrimmage.
And I'll kind of go along with that, is not turning the football over, which is so elementary, it's so vanilla, it's so basic. But it's the truth. Auburn,
this isn't week two. You're not allowed to be vanilla yet.
I know, not yet. I mean, Auburn struggled to not give the football to the other team last year. It's just a fact. How many games did Auburn lose directly because they turned the football over? Several come to mind. And I heard our guy Josh Pate say yesterday or the day before in his Auburn-Baylor pick, it was like the Oklahoma game still haunts him to this day. And he's not even an Auburn fan. It's like it was such a disaster. It was such a poorly executed game plan down the stretch, and a turnover literally gave that game away. And while I'm not saying you have to be perfect on offense and execute every single play and Jackson Arnold go 25 for 25 with 400 yards and 8 touchdowns and Damari Austin, you know what I'm saying? I'm not expecting or demanding perfection. I'm just saying, don't hurt yourself. Don't do it to yourself, Auburn, because that's what you've done this entire time. And if the weather is a little questionable, then running the football is going to be what you go to. And we know, as much as we like Damari Austin, that's the thorn in his side, is putting it on the ground. So Auburn's got to keep their own, keep possession, man. Don't give it up. This game is going to be hard as it is. Don't make it harder on yourself.
Backing up off of that, my second key for Auburn to win against Baylor is to make the game simple. Again.
And mine is play smart. That's mine.
They go pretty much hand in hand.
That's
funny because, again, we haven't looked at each other's, but looked at each other's keys. But making the game as simple as you can.
Yeah, that was bad. Yeah. Anyways.
Making the game as simple as you can. If you're getting 5, 6, 7 yards, stop looking at me. Every single carry, how many times have we seen Auburn do stuff like that?
Oh, jeez. Oh, God. Oh, there's really no coming back from that.
Nope, I'll wear it.
Yeah.
My second key to the game for Auburn is to make the game simple. What is yours?
to play smart, but literally, I said play smart. No dumb penalties, no miscommunication, no confusion. Like, what we've seen Auburn struggle with for so long, and to be completely honest, that goes on the offensive side of the football, right? Is anybody worried about Auburn's defense other than getting off the field on third and long and having some of those dumb penalties like we saw last year, right, of hitting guys out of bounds and late holds and blocks in the backs and things like that? I mean, is anybody worried about miscommunication on defense? I'm not. Is anybody worried about confusion on the defensive side of the football? I'm not. Is anybody worried about making the game simple on defense? No, because it's DJ Durkin, and he's the best defensive coordinator in college football. This is on the offensive side.
Yes.
This is, hey, Jackson Arnold and Hugh Freeze, be on the same page. I don't care who's calling the plays. Figure it out.
Yeah.
And quit having arguments after a bad possession because nobody knew what the heck was going on.
Or again, my example was if you're getting first, if you're first and 10, you're second and 4, you're first and 10, you're second and 3, you're first and 10, now you're second and 6. I don't need a 30-yard bomb. I don't need something. Make the game as simple as it possibly can be. How many times have we seen that? Arkansas is what comes to mind for that. Where Auburn was dominating the ground game in the second half, and all of a sudden Auburn's in field goal range with, what, 10 minutes left? And all of a sudden, nope, let's throw the ball three straight times. Incompletion, pick six, or not pick six on that drive, but a missed field goal was what came out of it.
Take what they give
you. Instead, make the game simple, give exactly what the defensive mind of Dave Aranha gives you, and, man, you feel like you're going to have a lot of success. Another thing, and my final one for Auburn to beat Baylor is, man, make Waco into your home. Auburn plays in stadiums bigger than this every single Saturday in conference play. 45,000?
Some of these guys played in bigger high school stadiums than
this. And we've seen many discussions on social media about the number of Auburn tickets that are being sold and how there's still tickets available for Auburn. Man, go turn Waco into your home. Shut the crowd up like what you're talking about, whether that's with big plays, whether that's just with an 8-minute touchdown drive. Take the crowd out of it and let one side of the stadium wearing the orange and blue go nuts.
You just got compared to Robert Griffin III, by the way, in our text box.
Why is that?
Robert Griffin III, Tom Hart, some of those guys. No particular
reason. Hey, it's after midnight.
No, it ain't. This ain't no after dark right here. A commercial break that we needed about 3 minutes ago. We're hitting it now, and Jordan Hill joins us after this.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and we get to the phone lines for our first guest of the day, a guy that joins us every Wednesday at 2:30. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs for Dogs 247. Jordan Hill is with us now, my man. We're glad to have you on, and exciting because it's finally football game week.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me back on. I don't know if we're going to do a 20-minute breakdown of UNLV Idaho State, but week zero gave us a little taste of what is on the horizon, and super excited to be back to an actual game week and have a chance to break it down with you guys.
Well, Georgia's had some exciting season openers as of late, but this year may not be the most exciting for those who aren't Georgia Bulldog fans as they open up with Marshall at Sanford Stadium Saturday afternoon, 2:30 on ESPN. Georgia favored by nearly 40 points in this football game. We'll get just some generic thoughts from you on that in just a couple of minutes. But now that fall camp is over for Georgia and we are in the season, we've had a chance to talk to you a few times about the progressions and some different players and position groups, but from the start to the end of fall camp, what has stood out to you the most for this Georgia squad?
I think the biggest thing is that they have growing confidence in the offensive line. That's been a group that I've had a lot of questions about, and you know they've sort of mixed and matched guys to figure out the starting five, and you know still waiting to see what that starting five will be, but I'm continuing to think you'll see a true freshman there. Juan Gaston, a five-star who got a lot of hype in spring practice, and he backed it up. Did a really good job of cutting some weight this offseason, lost probably about 25 pounds in the lead-up to his true freshman season. But I think that he is going to be Georgia's starting right guard. I think he's a guy that has come in and met all the expectations. And from what I've heard behind the scenes, Georgia feels like the entire offensive line is at its best when Juan Gaston is out there. So to me, the biggest question just this entire offseason about Georgia has been this offensive line, breaking in four new starters, not expecting them to play perfect football, but I think there's growing confidence in the group they have and that those five guys can go out there and consistently get the job done.
Well, those offensive line guys are obviously a very big part of the offense and a very big part of the quote that Kirby Smart was able to talk about. I've seen it circulating everywhere about talking about wanting to start fast for the Georgia offense and talked about the reality of, yes, I know every coach in America wants to start out fast and start out 7-0, but where do you see a lot of that coming from when it comes to starting fast for Auburn or for Georgia's offense, whether that be running the football, or do you think they try and go through it early, throw the ball early and get on the board?
I think you'll see a good balance of that on Saturday, partly because I think there's a renewed effort to try to get this run game on the right track. I mean, one of the big talking points going back really to spring practice, Georgia has wanted to run the ball better on offense and stop the run more effectively on defense. So that's been a huge calling card. And to say that, I do think they'll run the ball quite a bit and get some guys involved. But I think they're really excited about the potential of this passing game. You know, what they've gone and added from the portal, Gunnar Stockton having an entire offseason with a chance to run the offense. You know, Mike Bobo really designing this offense and knowing what plays Gunnar Stockton likes best. I think you'll see a good balanced attack. You know, I think that second half, you'll probably see a little bit more running the football. But Georgia knows that this receiving core is in a really good spot right now as far as the talent within it. A lot of guys who can play different positions and line up in different spots among the three wide receiver spots. So I think it'll be a balanced attack. I think they want to get both the run game and the pass game going, clicking on all cylinders. And I know if they can have a fast start on offense, score some points, that would be music to a lot of Georgia fans' ears.
Well, I think I saw Kirby, and a word that he's using to describe this year's team in particular is hungry, a team that's trying to get back to a college football playoff, trying to get back to competing for a national championship. And while this opener against Marshall may not be a true test for Georgia, it is game one and an opportunity for them to get out there on the field and kind of show some of that hunger, huh?
Yeah, not only that hunger, but also, too, something Kirby talked about earlier in the week. He was asked about different position battles and how some of them are looking. And, you know, Kirby made the point that just because it's game one doesn't mean some of these positions are sewn up. So there's opportunities for guys to go out there and prove they can make plays and be reliable. And, you know, you might have an opportunity at a certain position where maybe you went into the start of the season and thought, well, this guy's very clearly the starter. All it takes is either that guy struggling or someone behind him on the depth chart going out there and making some plays and showing he's up for the moment for things to totally change. So, you know, the Georgia-Marshall matchup is not going to be one when you look at the TV schedule for Saturday that you say, well, we got to circle this one. We got to pay a ton of attention to it. But there is opportunity for the guys on this roster. One, a chance just to go out there and, as some of the folks earlier in the week, some of the players were talking about, you know, go up against somebody in a different jersey on a different team. But at the same time, it's opportunity for guys to try to make their statement going in different position battles and trying to show that they deserve more playing time where that came from in week two and beyond.
September 13th, as Georgia makes their way to Neyland Stadium to take on the 24th-ranked Tennessee Volunteers. Many consider that to be the first time a lot of people will pay attention to this Georgia team. What do you think is being preached by Kirby and the coaches to try and master week one and week two before you hit your gruesome SEC schedule?
I think that Kirby's going to remind his players that Marshall is a conference champion, having won the Sun Belt last year. Now, that's a little bit of a stretch given everything Marshall lost this offseason. But I think more than anything, you know, Kirby's going to push the point that you're not guaranteed anything, whether that's beating Marshall. You know, you don't want to sleepwalk through a week one game and find yourself in an interesting situation. But again, kind of to the point I was just making, you know, these guys, there's a lot of talent throughout this roster. Even if you start week one at the top of the depth chart, you can't afford to sort of go through the motions. You can't afford to not be paying attention or to not be going all out, because the guys behind you are champing at the bit to get in the game and try to take some of those reps from you. So I think that's the biggest thing. And I do think it helps. You know, it's always going to be hard sometimes when you play a team of this caliber to not get caught sleepwalking. But the fact that this is week one, you know, that this is the point in the season that everybody's been working toward for Georgia, you know, going back to January when they lost in the Sugar Bowl. So that's quite a while that these guys have been, you know, getting ready and getting anxious for another game. I think that will help the cause. And, you know, we'll keep them motivated through 60 minutes play.
We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7. He's our weekly guest, our Georgia insider that joins us each and every week here on the show, and excited to really get into some of those games that you were talking about. And Christian mentioned that Tennessee game to get the season really started for this Georgia squad. But as you look around the other games in the SEC this week, Jordan, that Georgia fans may have their eyes on, what games will they have on the TV starting tomorrow with Missouri in action for the SEC?
Yeah, I think it starts, as far as Georgia fans are concerned, that Friday night game, the one you guys know well with Auburn and Baylor. I mean, I think that you don't really want to say it's a huge deal for Auburn, because I think if they were to lose that game, obviously still got a lot to play for. But it's a nice kind of look in to where this program is in Hugh Freeze's third year, how things are shaping up, and if they figured out things on offense, particularly quarterback and offensive line. But go to Saturday. You mentioned Tennessee. I'll be interested at noon to watch Tennessee and Syracuse. Tennessee, double-digit favorite, breaking in a new quarterback for them, Joey Aguilar, former Appalachian State quarterback who was briefly at UCLA before winding up at Tennessee. So he's really the guy I want to watch there, is just seeing how he manages the offense, if he's able to keep it clicking. And if, you know, to me, when you look at Tennessee, their offense, it's really going to dictate how far they go, just because there are big questions. And then, not to mention, they lost Dylan Sampson, who had a fantastic 2024. But, you know, elsewhere, the two probably biggest games, you know, Texas at Ohio State, that'll be another fun one at noon. That one, you know, just given how early this is in the season and the fact that Georgia doesn't play Texas until November, that's, for me, more entertainment than anything, because a lot can change for Texas. But everybody wants to see Arch Manning, especially how he handles that road environment. I won't miss that one. And then LSU at Clemson, super interested, you know, even though Georgia doesn't play LSU, just to see LSU, to me, sort of looks like that next team up as far as, you know, who we've talked about as SEC contenders, potential playoff teams. I really like what LSU brings back, but one of the main knocks on them during the Brian Kelly era, they start seasons really, really slow. That they seem to struggle in these season opening games when they play marquee opponents. You know, I think Brian Kelly's taken that to heart, and they've tried to change some things in preparation for that. But winning at Clemson is not going to be easy, especially against what I think could wind up being the best defense in the entire country.
Well, Jordan, we won't ask you to make any of these official game picks for week one, but throughout the entire season, do you have any bold predictions for whether that's Georgia or whether that's another team in the SEC or just the SEC as a whole?
I think the big thing I would say from Georgia, I think that people are going to realize they were sleeping on this offense. I think it's totally justified. You know, last year's offense was a little underwhelming, especially struggled early in games. Only averaged a little over 4 points per first quarter last year, which put them in some really tough situations and made them play from behind and have to come back in second halves of games. But I think this offense is ready to take a step forward with Gunnar Stockton as the quarterback, especially with what they've done to the receiver room. I think they're feeling really good about that group and their potential. And looking at the SEC on the whole, I don't really have a team that I think is just going to come up and totally surprise. I've got Georgia and Alabama in the SEC title game. I think Alabama, some folks writing them off, I think a little too soon. LSU right there in the mix as well. I mean, LSU brings back their lead passer, rusher, receiver, and tackler from last year. One of only two SEC teams to do that. And I guess if I was going to throw out maybe a surprise in the SEC, just very interested in Oklahoma. I think that it could really work with John Mateer and what they've done there. They were just so beat up last year, especially at wide receiver. I mean, they had no choice but to work with some walk-ons early in that season just because so many guys went down. So I'm not expecting anything too wild. Unfortunately for Diego Pavia, I don't know that Vanderbilt's going to be in that national title hunt like he hopes. But I do think that there's going to be a lot of teams taking out each other. You know, don't think we'll see an undefeated team in the SEC, but that's just sort of the nature of where this conference is, especially now that there's 16 teams in it.
He writes for Dogs 247. He joins us every single Wednesday at 2:30. He is Jordan Hill with us on the phone lines now. One question about basketball before we let you go. Your thoughts on Mike White and the Georgia Bulldogs being a part of Holiday Hoops Giving once again as Auburn takes on Chattanooga, but Georgia takes on Cincinnati, a really cool SEC Big 12 matchup there in Atlanta. Dog fans will be able to go see their team play on December 13th.
Yeah, it's another good opportunity in Atlanta. Georgia's done a very good job playing in some of these neutral site games. You know, they played some in this tournament last year against Grand Canyon, a really good performance by Georgia. They've played Notre Dame there a couple of years ago at this point. And, yeah, I think that matchup against Cincinnati, one of Georgia's better non-conference games this season. Really, on the whole, Georgia's non-conference schedule is nothing too wild. I mean, really, it's that game, Georgia Tech, and they will have a tournament right around Thanksgiving in Charleston where they'll play Xavier, who they played a few years ago in the NIT. Could also play either Clemson or West Virginia. That's sort of the other side of that bracket. So, no, I really like that matchup, Georgia and Cincinnati. Should be a good opportunity for Georgia, just given that it's essentially in their backyard. I go down to Atlanta, play in front of a bunch of fans, and you know, given the potential of this team, I think they have a good shot of walking off the court with a win.
Man, we always appreciate you and your time. I know you guys are getting ready to go for week one of the college football season. For anybody that's looking for more information on the Georgia Bulldogs, how can they find you and everything you got going on?
Definitely dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. Still got a 50% off sale over at Dogs247, so jump on that. That ends at 10:59 Central Time tomorrow night, so need to take advantage of that. And, yeah, countdown's almost over. Going to enjoy Thursday and Friday games that I can just sit back and watch, but we'll get ready to go to work on Saturday. Super excited for that, and just glad that the college football season's back.
Enjoy the opener, my friend. We'll talk to you again this time next Wednesday and do it all again.
Sounds great. I appreciate you guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs 247. Go check it out on dogs247.com. You can get everything you need to know about the Georgia team, depth chart, comments from Kirby Smart, and a whole lot more. We'll take our final break here in hour number one. Come back and wrap it up on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us as he does every single Wednesday. And just kind of a reminder what's coming up in hour number two. We're doing our full season predictions today for college football. We're picking conference winners for the Big 12, the ACC, the Big 10, of course the SEC as well. And then we'll have to move quickly, but we'll run through our college football playoff predictions as well. So looking forward to doing that in hour number two. But literally, as we were going to break, Auburn football announced the four elected team captains for the Auburn's team, the Auburn Tigers this year, voted on by the players, guys that were elected to be the captains of the team for the Tigers this year. Again, voted on by the guys in the locker room. Couple of these guys, you could probably predict that they were going to get the votes. The other two, there's four of them. Two of them were predictable. Two of them, I think it says a lot about what this team and what these guys are going to be for this team this upcoming season. The two you could probably guess is Keldrick Faulk on the defensive side and Connor Liu on the offensive side. Those are the two who were named and named first by Hugh Freeze. There's a video out, too, that's really, really neat. You can go watch that if you would like. The other two, Christian, Damari Alston and Champ Anthony. Says a lot about what those guys mean to the team, their vibes in the locker room, on and off the field, and hopefully, for Auburn fans, what their performance will be like this year, too. So Keldrick Faulk, Connor Liu, Damari Alston, Champ Anthony were all voted team captains today by their fellow teammates.
Yeah, and it's really cool hearing about Champ Anthony, just the Pirate, how came back from injury. And so to be a captain where you were not able to play the back half of your season, that goes to show a whole lot of what he means to that defensive back room. And then again, just as a leader on the defense, a leader on the team. And then, yeah, for DA, I mean, you're a guy that stuck it out. You're a guy that is still wearing orange and blue. And many forget, we talk about it all the time, he's a senior.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like he should be a senior because we remember when he committed. We remember when he played and got snaps as a freshman, and then a little bit more as a sophomore, became the number two back his junior year, but waited in that line. It's something, man, you just don't see in college football anymore. And I think the team responds to that. I think that they take that how you should take it. They don't take it for granted. They realize, okay, he's paid his dues. It's now his team. And obviously that goes for the way that he leads that running back room, the offense in general. There were five or six guys that Hugh Freeze mentioned as well that were like two or three votes behind. I know Jackson Arnold was right there, mm-hmm. As well a couple other guys on the defensive side of the football. And that right there is cool too, because that shows me that there's not just those three or four guys that are leading and they're the ones that everybody knows is going to get the votes. It shows you that it's a group full of leaders. It's a group full of guys that want to do the right thing. It's a group full of guys, man, that we heard a lot about last year of the upperclassmen were kind of ready to just throw away the season. And then it was the underclassmen that said, no, like that's not how we're running things. And so to be able to see a group of guys, man, come together and vote for four, but have so many guys in the running to wear the C on their jersey, you feel like that is really, really cool.
Yeah, and I mean, just because you're a captain on a football team or a team in any sport doesn't mean that you're just the bona fide starter, best player on the team.
No.
But when you look at the guys who were voted captains, I mean, you hope and feel that those guys are some of the best players on this team. Connor Liu anchoring the offensive line, who's going to be playing on Sundays. Keldrick Faulk the exact same way off the edge, as we've said several times, projected as a top 10 pick. And in the few conversations that you and I have had with Keldrick, I mean, just a great dude, just a super nice guy. This comes off as just a young, polite guy. And just like,
it weirdly doesn't make sense.
Yeah, weird. It's like, wait, you want to kill somebody on the football field?
Yeah.
Like you want to go just run somebody over? Like, are you sure?
Then you step off, take off the cleats, and soft-spoken, very quiet,
yeah, very nice
to himself.
Guy. Yeah, absolutely. But for Champ Anthony and Damari Alston to be voted captains, if they can back that up with their play on the field, Auburn's going to be in a pretty good spot this year. So very cool to see those guys be voted as captains. And we take a break because hour number one is in the books. And when we come back, full college football season predictions. We do that coming up next.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us and getting the second hour started with us. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go back and catch it with the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com. If you missed it, we talked with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. We also talked about the Baylor perspective on what their keys to the game are against Auburn as well. And so if you missed any of that in the first hour, go and check it out on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
We talked about it yesterday. We talked about it to end hour number one. Hour number two here today. Man, we're making our conference championship picks for the Big 12, the ACC, the Big 10, and the SEC. Jacob's going to make his prediction for the Pac-2 as well.
Yeah. Pretty, we're also doing FCS picks today.
We are. Yeah, yes, FCS. I think we have a couple American picks, the AAC. We have a couple Sun Belt teams in there.
Give me the Memphis
well.
Tigers, baby.
Correct. But no, all of those picks that we have coming for you, and we're diving into our 12-team bracket. Who do we have ranked and where, and who are our national champions? All of that coming up here in our number two. Man, we're hopping right into it. He's Jacob Goins. I'm Christian Griffin, and we appreciate everybody for being here with us on ESPN 106.7.
And people can give their picks to us if they would like to in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We appreciate you listening in and being a part of this conversation and looking forward to what we have for you. Again, we'll probably shut the phone lines down just so we can get through everything, but your conference championship picks, your playoff predictions, and more, you can get those in with us right now at 334-784-1067.
Man. How fun is it to be able to just have these conversations again?
It's here. I mean, the season's here.
It's absolutely incredible. And I say that we go ahead and we dive right into it. We're starting with the Big 12 and the ACC here in this segment, the Big 10 and the SEC in the next segment. It might filter over a little bit into the next. And then at 3:30, yeah, we're giving our national championship predictions. So, Jacob, your Big 12 conference championship game. And who wins?
This was the hardest conference. It really is, and it's something we've talked about all summer long, where it's a crapshoot in the Big 12 this season. And if you don't believe me, go look at the win total projections and go look at the conference championship winner projections and odds. I mean, it's all over the place. You have no team in the Big 12 with a win total greater than 8.5, but there's a ton of them there. And then teams that have good odds or decent odds to win the Big 12 conference. I mean, you have six teams that are under plus 1,000 odds. And if you're in that world, you know how good that is. That's not bad for Texas Tech, Arizona State, Utah, Baylor, Iowa State, and TCU. And look, I am in the belief that with the Big 12 this season, you could literally close your eyes, put them all on a list, and just point, and you have a pretty good chance of picking who the Big 12 champion's going to be. And I got to be honest, I hate to be this person, but I'm going to do it and pick a team that we've already seen, pick a team that we got a week to watch already. I like Iowa State to be in the Big 12 championship game. I think they showed a lot in that game. I think a lot of people had Kansas State picked in the game, yes, but also picked to be a Big 12 title favorite. I like Iowa State to be in the Big 12 championship game. I'm not a believer in Texas Tech yet. I think they're a year away. Arizona State will take a step back. Utah is Utah. They'll be good, not great. And I hate to be that person, but I'm going to pick the Baylor Bears to be in the Big 12 championship game.
Wow.
Even with the game on Friday. We'll talk about true picks coming up later. I have Baylor and Iowa State making it to the Big 12 championship game.
And the winner?
We're doing that already?
We are. Actually, no. Here, I'll give a little bit of insight for me as well. I also have Iowa State, the Cyclones, in that I think there is a very, very fun game that is going to take place on November 1st. And that is Arizona State traveling to Iowa State.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome game.
And I think the winner of that game gets into the Big 12 championship game. And I think Iowa State wins at home. I think there's another very fun game later on in that month when Kansas travels to Iowa State. And okay. I say that because that is my Big 12 rematch.
I knew that's where you were going.
That is my championship rematch is Kansas and Iowa State. And here's why. I know that I heard the car horns honking because Kansas ain't no way. Or it's the, well, yeah, you saw what they looked like against Fresno State. I was very high on Kansas last year when they had Devin Neal and Jalen Daniels in the backfield. Kansas went 5-7 last year. And not that this is comparably impressive, but I think Kansas and Auburn were the two best 5-7 teams in the country last year. Kansas lost seven games. Exactly. Yeah. Kansas lost seven games. Five of those games were by a combined 19 points. 19 points. I'll dive through this schedule real fast. You had. Oh, no, I just had it up. Come on, computer. Here we go. We had Kansas lose by six to Illinois on the road.
You a 10-win Illinois team.
You then lost to UNLV, who was very good last year as well, by three. You lost to four on the road at West Virginia. You lost by four on the road at Arizona State. You then beat Houston. You lost by two on the road. You're catching on to a theme here. Two on the road at Kansas State. And then you lost by four. No, you actually beat BYU 17-13. And you beat Iowa State at home as well. You now get a majority of those teams at home. I think the corrections are made. I've talked about it forever. I'm a big Jalen Daniels fan. When there were conversations of him entering the portal, I was on my knees at bed at night hoping that Auburn would somehow get into that conversation. And I think many people saw why in that Fresno State game. And I know you can take that game in particular with a grain of salt. However, I think the corrections are made. I think what they were able to get on the defensive side of the football is good enough in the Big 12. I have Kansas and Iowa State playing in the Big 12 championship.
It's not a bad pick by any means. I will say a couple of sleepers in that conference, and according to the betting odds, BYU is really talented and absolutely could make some noise in that conference. And most people, Christian, most people are going to write off Kansas State after everybody put them, had their stock high in week zero, picking them to win, right? Picking them to blow them out, picking, Kansas State to be a playoff team. Everybody's going to write that team off now because they lost in week zero in a conference game. I'm telling you, don't do it just yet. If Kansas State were to come all the way back and make it to the playoff after losing week zero to Iowa State, it would not surprise me. I have Iowa State, I have Baylor, and I have the Bears getting it done as a good team in the Big 12. They somehow, some way avoid chaos. They get out early in conference play, and they avoid the disaster that this conference is going to be, and I do. I have Baylor as my Big 12 champion.
I think Utah is another really quiet team in there that could make a lot of noise when it comes to maybe not making the playoff, but deciding who gets in to the college football playoff. Again, I have Kansas and Iowa State, and I have Kansas beating Iowa State in the Big 12 championship. I have two teams from the Big 12 making it to the college football playoff, and it's those two with Kansas beating Iowa State.
Yeah, I think I'll have Baylor and Iowa State in mind too. We'll talk about this a little bit more later, but I just think that makes sense in this conference. If you, again, if you have the record, the strength of record, the resume and things to get you to the Big 12 championship game, you probably have the resume that puts you in the college football playoff.
So Jacob has Baylor and Iowa State with Baylor winning. I have Kansas and Iowa State with Kansas winning, but both of those teams making our 12-team college football playoff. What about the ACC? Another very questionable conference when it comes to who's going to take. You don't feel like the first place. You feel like that's kind of solidified, at least from the chalk perspective on the betting favorites. But possibly a second or a third team, or do you see this conference going a little chaotic as well?
I think behind Clemson it will be chaotic because I think Clemson is one of the best teams in college football. I think they quietly have probably a top three roster. We've let Dabo Swinney do it again somehow, and he did it untraditionally by keeping players on his team and paying them NIL money based off their name, image, and likeness.
Yeah, once you play football.
Correct. And we just, Everybody pointed fingers. Everybody laughed. Everybody made fun of him. Everybody was like, oh, is Dabo done? And you start diving into this roster, and it's loaded. It's nasty on what they're going to have over there. I think behind Clemson, though, that's where the chaos is going to ensue. I think Louisville's a really good team. I think Georgia Tech is a really good team. I think Duke is a sneaky good team out of the ACC. Do not overlook the Dukies in this coming season. I think Florida State will be better, but not great. I don't believe in NC State. I'm not buying into Bill Belichick in North Carolina until I see it. But I do have Clemson, obviously, in my ACC championship game. When I tell you I'm so far out on Miami, it's unbelievable. I'm so far away from that team. I'm not even in the same casino as that card table. I'm not even touching it. I'm not even thinking about it. I have moved on to a casino down the road because I don't want anything to do with Mario Cristobal, Carson Beck, and the Miami Hurricanes. Why? Because they've never done anything. They've been irrelevant. They can't, until they prove it, I ain't buying. And I'm not buying Miami right now. Give me Clemson and Louisville in my ACC championship game. I hate that more people have started to jump on the cards because I really, really like that team. My dark horse is Duke. If Louisville doesn't make it, Duke will, but they'll be playing Clemson, and we can go ahead and get this out of the way. Clemson's going to win the ACC, and it may not be close.
Yeah, I have Clemson right in there as well. I'm going to dive into this team a lot more when it comes to the 12-team playoff that I have, because Cade Klubnik and Dabo Swinney, the amount of offensive and defensive production that they are returning are tops in college football, simply because of, yes, the way that they preach the retaining, and you're not hitting the transfer portal. We're not necessarily going into the transfer portal to find players either. We're going to recruit you out of high school. We're going to develop you, and then when you become a sophomore, a junior, or a senior, you're going to have a whole lot of success. I have Clemson in the ACC championship, and it's funny because I spent the most time, other than maybe the SEC, here on the second team in the ACC. I think Duke goes 8-4 at worst. I think Miami goes 9-3. I think SMU goes 9-3. And I think Georgia Tech goes 10-2.
Yeah.
And I think they make the jump with Haynes King. I have Clemson playing Georgia Tech in the ACC championship game. And I think there are three teams in the ACC that make it to the college football playoff. I have Clemson, obviously, Georgia Tech, obviously. And I think the game on November 1st in the ACC conference will determine the third team to make the playoff. And I think Miami goes on the road to beat SMU, because I don't think that Mr. Jennings and Mr. Rhett Lashley are going to be able to do what they did again last year. I think Miami sneaks in to the college football playoff, and I say that right now because a team that plays a lot of SC or a lot of ACC opponents, a team that played for the college football national championship last year, the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, will not be in the college football playoff this year. They're going to go 9-3. It's the very first time that the strength of record is now a legitimate conversation when it comes to the playoff votings, when it comes to the rankings, who gets in, who gets left out. I think Miami will have a better win-loss and a better strength of record if both teams go 9-3, and you know they want to put Miami in the college football playoff. I think Miami sneaks in as that third team from the ACC.
I mean, it shows how big that game is on opening weekend, right? With Notre Dame going to Miami to open up the season. Then Notre Dame plays Texas A&M in week two, hosting Texas A&M at Notre Dame. They also go to Arkansas. They play Boise State, does Notre Dame. They play Syracuse on that schedule. The back end is extremely easy, but I hope you're right, brother. I hope you're right. Not in terms of Miami, because I don't believe in them, but I hope you're right for Notre Dame, because I'm ready for them to get taught a lesson. I'm ready for college football to finally show the middle finger to Notre Dame.
Yes.
But the playoff committee will never do it. If there's any chance, 9-3, I'm sorry, 9-3 Notre Dame gets in. Ain't no way that they leave Notre Dame out of the college football playoff. If they can make the argument for it, they will make it happen.
And that's why that game on Sunday, August 31st, will be the biggest game that both teams play this year. The winner of that is the team for me that sleeps or that sneaks in. I will trust in week one Carson Beck at home over C.J. Carr and a quarterback that's still underdeveloped. I will take Miami, the 10th-ranked team, to go and win that game week one, and that will be the one game that they go back to allow the Hurricanes to sneak in.
So you're taking Miami to win the opener against Notre Dame. Who were the other two losses for the Fighting Irish? Just curious.
I have them losing.
You probably have A&M beating them and, what, Boise State?
Maybe? I think their one big loss comes I think it comes to Pitt late in the year.
On the road?
I think Pitt is a sneaky good team. I don't think that it's going to be one of those big games, but if it could be a night game at Pitt – and then, man, either A&M, Arkansas, or Boise State.
There's an opportunity for Sam Pittman in Arkansas to get a really nice win.
How gross is that game, and how terribly of a spot is that for Notre Dame to have to go to Fayetteville at 11 a.m.?
Yeah, it's gross. Week four of the season. No doubt about it. I think if Notre Dame has any sort of argument, they will always get in for the obvious reasons. But I hope you're right. I hope that you're right. So you have Clemson in the ACC championship game, winning the ACC championship game over Georgia Tech.
Yes.
But also Miami backdooring their way into the playoffs.
Correct.
All right. We continue talking college football, playoff predictions, conference predictions, and more. We want to hear from you. Shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. Phone lines are closed because it keeps us on track if they are, unfortunately. We get to more conference predictions after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on with our conference predictions for college football for the 2025 season as we got to move a little quick. I'll tell you what, Christian, why don't we go ahead and just, we're back. And no, I was going to say, why don't we just blow out the music at the bottom of the hour? That'll give us a few extra minutes to get this segment in. We'll take a little bit of a later break, and then we can get to our playoff predictions as well. And so we are talking Big Ten and delete the, commercial break. There you go. Beautiful. Power radio, baby. We'll do Big Ten and SEC. Big Ten, I fear we're going kind of chalk here, too. Yeah. I have a bad feeling that the Big Ten is going to do what the ACC that you predicted that they're going to do. Two teams will obviously make their conference championship game, but the third team that doesn't will back their way into the college football playoff. That's what I have. I've been on the train that Penn State will make it to the Big Ten championship game for obvious reasons. I think they are probably the most talented team in college football this year. Their schedule is really not that bad. I am curious on if they can get up off the mats to start Big Ten play with Oregon coming to town, because Penn State, we've talked so much about Indiana being the laughingstock of college football with their non-conference schedule. Penn State does the exact same thing. Penn State plays nobody. They play Villanova, who most people don't even know have a football program. They play them in one of their non-conference games. But I think Penn State will get to the Big Ten championship game. And as much as I don't want to do it, I think Ohio State gets there. I hate to just say the two favorites are going to get to the Big Ten championship game, but Oregon is that team that I'm not sold on yet. Everybody wants to put them as just sharpie it in as the third best team of the Big Ten. I'm not there yet, Christian. I'm not there yet, but I do put Penn State and Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game, and the thing that I've been on all offseason long, and I'm sticking to it, Penn State's going to win the Big Ten title, but they do not win the national title. And I don't know if that's good enough for James Franklin. It's probably good enough for him. I don't know if it's good enough for the fan base in Happy Valley. I'm curious on how that goes down. Yeah, I'll ask him. He listens to the show. I'll ask him. But that schedule's not all that bad, man. They get Oregon at home. They go to Ohio State, and they get Indiana at home. That's it. Penn State's a one-loss football team at worst. They'll be in the Big Ten title game. They'll be one of the top four seeds with a bye in the college football playoff, but I think Ohio State's a nasty team too. I think Ohio State could get off to a really nice start in week one, if I'm being completely honest with you. And so Penn State gets there, Ohio State gets there, and there's a third team out of this Big Ten that backdoors their way into the college football playoff. We'll talk about that more momentarily, but I hate to go chalk of the Big Ten, but I got to do it.
I wish I was anywhere but in full agreement with you. I have Penn State playing Ohio State. That will be the rematch because I have Ohio State beating Penn State
in Columbus.
But that will be, I think, the only game that Penn State loses.
I agree.
I then think Penn State beats Ohio State in the rematch in the Big Ten championship. And we'll talk about it more. But I don't think they only play twice.
Okay, there you go. So most people going chalk in the Big Ten. Let's flip over to the SEC before we do take our bottom of the hour break and talk about the college football playoffs.
I do, however, have a third team sneaking in as well.
I do. Yeah, I'm the same way. And I don't know if it's going to be the same team. It might be, but I don't know. So, okay, now we get to the SEC. In this conference, we talk about the Big 12 being chaotic. On the outside, from a 500,000-foot view, the SEC seems like, oh, well, yeah, it's Texas and Georgia and maybe Alabama and LSU, right? But then you start to take a little bit of a deeper dive into the Southeastern Conference. And I think you and I are kind of on the same train. Maybe we've just been working together too long. I think we both have this conference possibly being the most fun conference in college football this year because of how the schedules play out, where teams play each other on the schedule, that is, and what could actually go down in the SEC. Who makes the title game out of the Southeastern Conference? Who plays in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta?
Man, it's a team that, again, if we're going the same direction, it's a team that we both kind of made fun of a little bit earlier in the year, and we talked a lot about how, man, I just don't think they can do it. I don't think that Brian Kelly can do it. I don't think that Garrett Nussmeier can do it. But the more that I looked at it and the more that I thought about it, the more it hurts me to say I think LSU makes it into the college football or makes it into the SEC championship game. And another team that I don't really love saying will make it, I think it's a 9-3 Texas team. And yes, I said that correctly. I think it is a 9-3 Texas team. However, one of those losses comes to Ohio State here on Saturday, which is not a conference loss. They go 7-2 in conference play. I have two or three other teams going 6-3. Or, sorry, we don't have the 9-game schedule yet.
Yeah.
Apologies.
You uncultured swine.
But one of their losses is non-conference. And so they will only have two conference losses rather than the others will have three. I think LSU beats Texas in the SEC championship game.
Okay. I hate the fact that we didn't compare notes before or look at each other's before we got on the show today because I like LSU too. The more I started doing research, more I looked into it, man, this LSU team is really good. You heard Jordan Hill say it earlier today. They bring back their quarterback, their running back, their receiver, their leading tackler. They have everybody back, and they've bought this team with as much money as they could physically find in Baton Rouge. This is it. I mean, this is the team, and this is about the time that LSU comes back around and tries to compete for a national championship. LSU, here's my prediction on them. They're going to lose week one. They're not going to Clemson to win in this game, and it could look rather bad. Maybe not horrible. Maybe not blundering it like they did against USC. But LSU's not winning in Death Valley on Saturday night. In the real Death Valley, according to Clemson, after they win this game. But their schedule's not that bad, man. They get Florida early, who I think is a really good team. A team that won't be 9 wins in the SEC, but will have something to say to some people in the SEC.
But it's a night game in Baton Rouge.
Correct. Night game, week 3 of the season. LSU's looking for their first win of the big win of the year. I have LSU winning that game. You go to Oxford, but that's not anybody wins there, man. People win games in Oxford. Kentucky won in Oxford, bro. Anybody can win there. And I think LSU, or I think Ole Miss is good, not great. You get South Carolina in Death Valley. You get Texas A&M at Death Valley. You got to go to Tuscaloosa. cool. I think LSU is leaps and bounds better than Alabama is this year.
I think that's the one conference game they lose.
And very could be. Absolutely could be. But I have them just tearing it up in the SEC down the stretch. Who knows what Oklahoma is by the time that game comes around. That could be make or break for LSU in the season. And Norman, at the regular season finale, I think LSU loses in the opener and just quietly soaks back in and just leans back, takes care of business. People won't talk about them all that much. Then they'll get hot in the SEC. I have LSU getting to the SEC championship game. I also have Texas getting to the SEC championship game. But I have their record better than you do. I don't think Texas' schedule's all that bad. I think their schedule is kind of cake compared to some of the other squads around this conference. But I also have them losing to Ohio State in the opener, not to give too much away from Friday. But yeah. I have them losing that game. I have them going and beating Florida, beating Oklahoma, beating Kentucky, beating Mississippi State, beating Vanderbilt. The Georgia game in Athens will tell me a lot. I think they beat Arkansas. I think they beat Texas A&M. Even if they lose the Georgia game, Texas is a one-loss team in the SEC to me. They're a two-loss team overall. They are the SEC representative, and they are the SEC champion.
Wow.
Arch Manning Sark will get good it. As it gets down the stretch. Sark will have his team ready to go. Give me Texas over LSU in the SEC championship game. Texas will be probably the third seed in the college football playoff. I know we're going to talk about that in a moment. Maybe not seed lines exactly, but Texas will be the top representative of the Southeastern Conference.
I have Texas losing to, again, Ohio State. I have them losing to Florida on October 4th.
Not a bad pick.
And then I have them losing to Georgia on November 15th. You lose three road games, but only two of them in conference play, and that's what gets you over the hump, because I think there's going to be a lot of chaos behind those two right here. I think a combination of Tennessee, Georgia, and Alabama, who all have to play each other, I think there is going to be chaos in one of those three teams, whether it's Tennessee, whether it's Georgia, or whether it's Alabama, because of who else they beat. I think they sneak in as well.
I think the SEC will look eerily similar to the Big 12 at the end of the year when it's all said and done. Cannibalism will take over this conference. And yeah, it may hurt the SEC at the end of it, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. Because now we get to talk about our playoff predictions.
Before we do that, your Big 10 team to sneak in.
Oh, that's right. You go first.
You want me to?
Yeah.
I think there's a team that wears red.
You're not picking the Hoosiers. Ain't no way. You ain't picking Kurt. You don't. You're not ripping a cig right now. You're not going Kurt Cignetti. You're going the team with Dylan Raiola and Lincoln, Nebraska. You're taking the Huskers.
I'm taking the Huskers. Yep. The way that Indiana did it last year.
Really?
Look at their schedule.
You think they're the Indiana of the year? Huh?
You play Cincinnati and Arrowhead. You'll win that game.
I'm just kidding. Akron, I want Cincinnati.
Akron, Holy Cross, Michigan at home. You'll win that one. Michigan State at home. Nebraska or Maryland on the road. Minnesota on the road. You'll win both of those. Northwestern at home. USC at home will be a very fun game. You then go to UCLA. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
You go to Happy Valley before you host Iowa. There's two losses on that schedule, Max.
Yeah. If Nebraska can just take care of business, literally do what you're supposed to do, they absolutely could be a dark horse to make it to the college football playoff. And as good as I think the other team in red is, Indiana, I think they're a really talented squad. Fernando Mendoza's their quarterback. Sorry, Auburn fans, don't wreck your car. I think they're a really good team. They've got three All-Americans on the defensive side of the football. They bring in three offensive linemen as well. I'm not taking the Hoosiers to make it. I'm taking a team that plays across the country, way up north in the corner of the country.
And one of the best underrated stadiums in all of college football.
I'm taking Damon Williams and the Washington Huskies to backdoor their way into the college football playoff. You better believe it. That team is good. Their schedule is favorable, and all their big games are at home. Give me Washington to host a playoff game in the college football playoff.
And then just watch the Alabama fan base crumble when DeBoer leaves and then Washington.
Playoff committee, if there's ever a time for you to do something that is so awesome for college football.
You didn't think about that.
No, I didn't, but I'm thinking about it now. Please, for the love of God, send Kalen DeBoer and the Alabama Crimson Tide to Seattle, Washington to take on his former squad. Oh, could you imagine? They're in it for the ratings. They're in it for the money. That would have every person in America watching. Are you kidding me? Oh, my goodness. All right, so you have Nebraska as the third team in the Big Ten. I have Washington finding a way in as well. We got to get to break because we got to talk about the playoffs. We do that coming up next.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Again, no Daryl Dapperts today, no Double D Wednesday. He is traveling in Texas as we speak, and so we will have him on again next week to get his thoughts on Auburn and Baylor and a recap version of the show and previewing the home opener for the Auburn Tigers. So we took this time today to make our full season predictions. We've gone through the four major conferences, and now we got to move. We got to do it quickly. But we get to make our college football playoff predictions. And if you missed any of it or any of the show today, go back to our station website and check it out in the podcast center at ESPNAU.com. And for the people that have been listening, Christian, they have an idea of who's making the playoff out of these big conferences, out of these, out of the P4. Is there anywhere on your playoff bracket that you don't have a conference championship participant making the college football playoff? Any team that makes it out of the P4 to the conference championship game, do you automatically have them making it to the college football playoff?
I do. Yes.
I do too.
Yes. And then there's a couple where that third place team sneaks in.
Yes. All right. Let it rip, Tater Chip.
Oh, man. All right. I have as the number one team in the country after the rematch with Penn State beating Ohio State in the Big Ten, I have Penn State as the number one team in the country going into the college football playoff.
Copy and paste. I do too. I have, again, I think they're the most talented team in the country. I really do. I think they're the most talented team. I think their schedule's a cakewalk outside of two games, one of them being at home. And I think they're a good team. And I think James Franklin is a really, really good coach. He's just not a winner. He's not a great coach. He can't get it done in the big moments. But for this, yes, I have Penn State as the number one overall seed.
And you probably are right there with me for two and three. I would imagine I have both Tigers, but I have Clemson out of the ACC as the number two overall team in the playoff with LSU right behind up at number three.
I have Clemson at two, but I have Texas at three. Remember, I have Texas That's winning right. The SEC championship game over LSU, so I have Penn State one, Clemson two. I have the Horns at three, which it makes sense, but it almost makes too much sense for me. So I'm scared about it. I'm worried about it. It's chalk. It's chalky as chalk gets, but for now, that's where we're going, is Penn State 1, Clemson 2, and Texas 3.
The last team for me to have a bye in the first round is the other team from the Big Ten. I have Ohio State getting that first round bye at the number 4 spot.
Because remember, it's not guaranteed for the conference champions anymore to be the top 5 seeds in the playoff, get the bye and all that mess. It's strictly 1 through 12.
Yes.
Right? So people have to remember that as well. And that's where I put the Buckeyes, too. I love a lot of other teams. I just think Ohio State's good, man. They've paid 30-something million for a roster. It's going to be good. I'm putting Ohio State as my fourth team as well.
All right. First round, 8 through 9, or 8 and 9, 5 playing 12, 7 playing 10, and 6 playing 11. I don't know if you did. I made a little bracket so I can look at everything now. But yeah, but it works out. Your 8-9 matchup. The number one.
Oh, we're going 8-9 first? Okay. Because I was wanting to go 5-12. I was just going to go in order.
Let's go 5-12 then. Let's do it.
Because I have LSU at 5.
Okay.
I have LSU at 5 because I think they're really good. Again, I think they're SEC runner-up. I think their schedule is good, and I think they take care of their schedule. I still have them losing to Clemson in the season opener, but making it to Atlanta, falling short against Texas. But I have LSU as the 5. I have them taking on, I think, the most popular pick to be the G5 representative. I have the Boise State Broncos. Because I can't find another team, Christian, that I just truly believe in. So many people jumped on UNLV and then have completely cashed in on, or they've just taken the L on those bets now for what happened with UNLV in week 0. Could you pick one of the academy schools? Sure. Could you pick Tulane? Maybe. I just don't see it happening, man. I'm going to take Boise State as my G5 team, taking as the 12 seed, taking on LSU as the 5.
I have Ohio State, again, the one non-conference champion that gets the first round bye. I have my other conference champion as that 5 spot in the Kansas Jayhawks. I think that will be one of the teams that...
Kansas as the 5?
To be... As the conference champion,
wow.
I do. I have them as the number 5 team.
Yeah, I guess so.
And I think that will be something that will get a lot of the same reaction that you get once everything, or if everything, looks this way because of it. But I as well have the number 5 team beating the number 12 team. I have Kansas also beating Boise State.
Yeah, and then this is where I start to bring the Big 12 in, because for folks who weren't tuned in, I had Baylor winning the Big 12 title, and I put them at 6 just because I feel like the playoff committee will have to put them high because they won a P4 conference title. But I'm glad, and I'm afraid with the terrorism that's going to be of the Big 12. I mean, it's they're just going to beat each other up, man. It's going to be horrible. And I'm afraid for their sake, the playoff committee will look at this and look at that strength of record number 2 and may not rank them as high, but I have LSU 5, and then I'm putting Baylor at 6 as the Big 12 conference champion.
And who do you have them playing?
See, this is where it gets interesting. This is where it gets really interesting, because you could put...
These are the backdoor teams.
These are the backdoor teams. I think this is where Washington goes.
Okay.
This is where the Washington Huskies go as a backdoor team out of the Big Ten. I think they're uber talented. I think they're scary. And this is where I put the Big Ten backdoor of Washington at the 11th spot. And please give me Washington versus Baylor in 6v11. I think that would be awesome. I know I predicted them to host.
If we can't get Washington to host Alabama, that's what you want.
Yeah, I know. Those were pipe dreams, but Washington finds the way in. But them hosting a game would be a lot to ask.
It'd be a lot of fun. My 6th seed, I have the Big 12 runner up. I have Iowa State as the number 6 seed. And, man, there's my backdoor team as well. Sunday, August 31st, Notre Dame taking on Miami. I think Miami at home gets the job done, and that right there is what I talked about. We'll sneak them into the playoff. Miami will travel to the Cyclones to take on Iowa State.
Could be a really good game. It absolutely could. I don't like this Miami team. There's something about them. Until I see it, I just can't buy in. Now we're at 7, right? We're at 7, and this is where I put my ACC runner-up. This is where I put the Louisville Cardinals, because I think they're a good team. Again, I don't have Miami as a team that's making it to the ACC championship game. I've talked about a possible backdoor out of the ACC, but I'm not ready to buy in on that conference yet. I'm putting Louisville in this spot as making it to the college football playoff, because I think they're the second-best team in the conference. I put them at my 7 spot.
My number 7 team in the country is... I messed up my rankings.
Uh-oh.
Because it should be the Texas Longhorns.
Okay.
As my number 7
team. Change
it
on the fly.
I am. That's what we're doing for right now. Texas will be my 7th ranked team.
Okay.
And they will...
Because that's only your second SEC team, right? Because you had LSU... up there because they win the SEC. You're still looking for your second SEC team. Okay.
But yes, I have Texas as my 7th ranked team going into this. I forgot. I moved them down 1 because I made changes on the fly with my conference predictions, but yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
No, not at all.
Okay. All right. So Texas as a 7th ranked team making it to the college football playoff. And Imagine the year starting out, this is the number 1 team and you're the 7th seed. Not that it would be a bad thing. It would just be the drop, I guess, of Texas and Arch Manning to the 7th spot. That would give them a host, though. That would give Austin a host opportunity for the Texas Longhorns against the 10th seed. So that could be pretty cool.
We're trying to fix my bracket here because it was a lot easier to look at when everything was bracketed. I think I have it up here now. Penn State 1, LSU 2, or Clemson 2, LSU 3, Ohio State 4. Yes. Kansas, Boise State. Yes. Okay. We're back.
You're back.
We're back.
Like Texas, you're back.
We are.
Texas has
the
7.
Call me Sam Ellinger.
Texas has the 7, and then we got to get a break.
And I have another rematch. I have Texas hosting the University of Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah, Georgia is your 10 seed.
Georgia is my 10 seed, and I think that's because I talked about a lot of the SEC teams will go 9-3 with Tennessee, Georgia, and Alabama. That one of those teams will get in as the third place team in the SEC, and it's because Georgia is the one that beat Texas in the regular season.
I have Georgia as my 10 seed too.
Really?
Yep, I do. I have them backing in just because they'll be good, really good, but they won't be in Atlanta, but it won't matter. They're going to do what Alabama did all those years ago, and I have Georgia finding their way into the college football playoff too. As a 10 seed traveling to, what I say, Louisville, right? That's what I have written here. Louisville is my 7 seed. It could get ugly in that game. But that's what I have, is LSU, or Louisville, rather, hosting Georgia in the 7-10 matchup. 8-9 when we come back and we wrap it all up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Okay, we're down to the 8-9 game, and then we got to pick national champions, and we got to do it fast. My 8 seed in the college football playoff for no other reason other than they feel like they have to put this team in there when they have a halfway decent record because they bring money. Notre Dame is my 8 seed. It's disgusting, but I hate it, and it is what it is, but I have to do it. Notre Dame is the 8 seed. And then I'm taking the Big 12 runner-up, Iowa State, as the 9 seed. Notre Dame will host the Cyclones. Could be a good game, but whatever. And then, yeah, that completes my 8-9. Who'd you have?
My 8-9 is Georgia Tech hosting Nebraska.
That's really awesome.
Which could be a
That's awesome.
Very, very fun game. But that rounds up the very first bracket, so the first round games. All right, fast. Penn State is your 1 seed,
yeah,
playing your 8-9. Who wins it?
Penn State. I mean, Penn State by a million.
I have Penn State beating Nebraska as 1-9. Kansas, Boise State, or who was your 5-12? Sorry.
I had Boise is my 12. I closed my laptop. I had who was my 5? Because I have Penn State 1.
Was it LSU?
I have Texas. Yeah, LSU.
So LSU.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
LSU plays Boise State, Ohio State, and LSU. Who wins it?
Ohio State.
Ohio State.
Ohio State is going to beat LSU, and they're going to question whether Brian Kelly's got it, being able to do it.
I have Kansas beating Boise State, and then Ohio State beating Kansas, which gives me a Penn State, Ohio State best of 3. Ohio State wins round 1. Penn State wins round 2. And Penn State wins round 3 to go to the national championship. The bottom half of the bracket, your 7-10.
Was, I'm trying to remember this on the fly because I closed all my stuff.
Well, that's not good.
I know. Regardless for me.
Regardless, does your 2 seed Clemson advance?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my thing. Everything goes almost chalk for me.
Yeah.
Once you get to the playoff, everything goes near chalk.
I have Texas
unfortunately
hosting Georgia. Texas wins.
That'd be a good
Texas
game.
Plays Clemson, a rematch of last year, and Clemson gets the upper hand in this one to beat the Longhorns. My 6-11 is Iowa State and Miami, and for no other reason than Miami finding some reason to play good, I have Miami winning, playing LSU, and LSU wins it. I have chalk as well, 1, 2, 3, and 4 playing in the quarterfinals.
Who's your national champion?
I have Penn State beating Ohio State. I have Clemson beating LSU, and I have, unfortunately, the Clemson Tigers being the best team in the country, playing the second best team in the country, and beating Penn State.
Talk about unfortunate. I'm picking a team to go back-to-back. I'm taking Ohio State. I hate it, but I'm taking Ohio State to go back-to-back. So there you go. Conference champion predictions, playoff predictions, and more. But a good show. Check it out, ESPNAU.com. Christian, you're back tomorrow. We'll talk more. You'll tell them more because I'll be on the road. We'll tell you more about it tomorrow, 2-4 here on ESPN. Until then, he's Christian. I'm Jacob. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.